Hey there, welcome to the Lore to Death podcast, a deep dive into the lore of your favorite games, movies, shows, and more. My name is Brent, and today I want to take a look into something that was requested by a viewer or listener. But first, I just wanted to take a quick second to say thank you for all of the support lately. The positive response in the last few weeks has been incredible, and I just wanted to say, again, a very heartfelt thank you. If you like the show, and I know I usually don't do this, please be sure to rate it 5 stars. It actually really does help me out quite a bit. It helps others find this podcast, and it helps relate this podcast to other podcasts. So if you haven't rated it yet, wherever you listen, please give it a rating. I would really appreciate it. We can get this out to more people. And speaking of getting this out to more people, I have had a couple questions lately about merch and a Patreon or something of the sort so that people can support the podcast. And I just want to say that merch is coming. I'm not exactly sure when it will come, but it is in the works. So if you follow me on social media, you will find all of the information there. And when it does finally come, I will put it in an episode, but I don't want to date the episodes too badly. And in terms of Patreon, I'm very on the fence about doing anything like that. So if that is something that people want, please send me a message. Let me know that that is something you want. If it is something that is wanted by enough people, then I will consider starting something. But for the moment, there's not necessarily plans for that, but there is plans for merch. And I just want to apologize quickly before this episode starts because my throat is absolutely killing me. And I'm sure that you can hear that. But without further ado, we had this one come in from a fellow by the name of McLean, and they asked if I could talk about the Furon-Blisk Martian War from Destroy All Humans. And upon seeing this request, I knew that I immediately had to write about it. Even though this is going to be a short one, I remember these games so fondly, so I had to. Back in the Blockbuster days, my family used to rent a movie pretty well every weekend, and we'd sit together as a family and watch it. Eventually, I became an absolute recluse, doing pretty well nothing but playing video games day in and day out, which doesn't really feel all that different from today, except I'm a semi-productive member of society. My mom ended up getting the subscription at Blockbuster, where you could take out a game and return it once you're done for another. And this was a much better way of experiencing new games than using all of my lawn mowing money, because then I'd have to take a chance on new games, and if I hated it, then I kind of just had to own it or hope that the resale value was good enough for me to get another game with it. And I played a lot of trash that way. But I played even more trash with the Blockbuster subscription. But this was one of the first games that I ever ended up actually picking up with that subscription. And I don't think anything could have prepared me for what I was about to experience. I was pretty young, but I loved it. And I love Destroy All Humans so much that I ended up buying a copy of my own so I could just play it again and again and again and not have to waste picking it up repeatedly at Blockbuster. And then when the second one came out, I bought that as well. But I do want to say, I have not played the remakes. It's just something that I haven't really had the time or interest, really. I love these games, but it's very much a nostalgia spot in my mind. And it's not something that I am actively looking to play the remakes, but maybe if they go on a sale one day, I'll pick them up. But as much as I love these games, they are not very lore rich. I just want to take a second to prove that point by reading just the 3 sentences that appear on the wiki page for the Martian War. The Martian War was a devastating war between the Blisk and the Furons. The end of the war resulted in Mars being turned into a desert by the dangerous Furon weapons, which later caused the Furons their genitalia and the near extinction of the Blisk. That war was thought to be ancient and occurred long before humans first appeared on Earth. And that's it. That's all that is written there on the wiki page. There's like no links to anything. So I had to dig a little bit for this one. And you might be asking, then how are you going to make an entire episode on one hyper-specific event? And the answer is, carefully. There's a lot to unpack in that synopsis, and it gives us a lot to go on, strangely enough. Namely, we have the names of the 2 races that are involved in this war, the Blisk and the Furon. We also have the confusing statement about the Furon losing their genitalia, which I'm sure is shocking if you've never played the games before. And then there's the mention of ancient times before humans first appeared on Earth. So we have the 2 main parties, an event that was caused by or caused the war, and we have a reference to a timeline, vaguely, very vaguely do we have a reference to the timeline. And I think with that, we have enough to go on for at least a short episode. So let's start this off by talking about the Blisk and the Furon. I'll start with the Furon, since those are the protagonists of our story. The Furon are an alien race who came from the aptly named planet of Furon. They are little gray-skinned, big-eyed, bipedal aliens, which are physically based on the prototypical Roswell alien. This spacefaring race of aliens went all around the galaxy and encountered Earth while it was still in its primitive stage before they were humans, as we mentioned before. During their stay on Earth, the Furon decided that the reasonable course of action was to fornicate with an early primate version of man, thus leaving behind some of their DNA. And I know that seems like a really weird thing to come right out the gate with, but this is actually the reason why man came to exist, and that's actually pretty important. The infusion of Furon DNA with the primate is what sparked the evolution into man, which means that every little bit of human's DNA comes with a little bit of Furon DNA. This encounter with Earth was very early on in their exploration of the galaxy, and they saw very little value on Earth, and so they decided to abandon it and move on to other planets where they would slowly gather up the Furon Empire. At some point in their search for other worlds, they came upon Mars in the same solar system, and this is where they would have their first interaction with the Blisk. The Blisk are an aquatic race from Mars. One of the Furon, Orthopox, put it best. Imagine a cockroach mating with a lobster, which is to say that they had a hard gray carapace over a brown mushy interior. Considering that they're an aquatic race, the lobster comparison is actually pretty apt with their small beady eyes and antenna that come out of their forehead. However, despite being an aquatic race, they were bipedal and had no fins, webbing, or anything to discern that they would have been an aquatic race other than their carapace. So maybe evolution failed them on that front. During the time that the Furon found the Blisk on Mars, Mars was abundant with water, as you might expect with an aquatic race being the dominant species on the planet. And the Blisk were quite content to be left alone, having no imperial ambitions, but they were a very proud race. This is very important to understanding them as a race. They were very proud of what they had, but they didn't really desire more quite yet. The Furon quickly discovered that the waters on Mars were highly radioactive, which meant that the Blisk were basically steeping themselves in a radioactive tea, day in and day out. This gave them a natural resistance to nuclear and other radioactive weapons, which was kind of the bread and butter of the Furon colonial machine. And like I said, the Blisk were very content to just be left to their own devices and weren't inherently hostile, even though they were a very strong race. But the Furon saw their radioactive resistance as a potential threat to their empire, since they would have a hard time dispatching them if they ever did decide to gang up and attack. Now, I know that I said the Furon were our protagonists, and that would naturally make the Blisk our antagonist. But I think it's important to remember that being the protagonist does not always mean being the good guy and vice versa. And to that point, the Furon are actually quite terrible. They're a very xenophobic race and quite hostile to other life forms. The reason that they saw no value in Earth is because there wasn't a sentient species yet, which is why they abandoned it to find other planets where they would enslave other races who they saw as inferior and eliminate those who could pose a threat, like the Blisk. The Furon also saw themselves to be immortal, which was due in part to their technological advancements in cloning. Cloning wasn't something that the Furon just did in times of desperation, but in their everyday life, which made them dependent on it to survive, and they pretty well based their entire social hierarchy on cloning. See, most of the Furon would create a clone so that their clone could continue doing their day job while they went on vacation. That's how easy it was to make a clone. But as soon as the clone wasn't needed anymore, they would be dispatched. So cloning was happening hundreds, thousands, who knows how many times a day, and who knows how many times in one Furon lifetime. And if a Furon was reaching an age where they would die of natural causes, they could just clone themselves and essentially keep living on. To this point, there was a sort of social score that was based on how many clones one had. If you had many clones, you were considered lower class, and the less clones you had put you higher up in the ranks. This was something to the effect of needing fewer clones meant that you were wise, as it meant that you could handle your problems without just creating more of yourself. And those Furon who had less clones would end up becoming elders and political figures. I know that that was a bit long-winded and might not seem exactly pertinent to their encounter with the Blisk, but it's actually quite the opposite. See, the Furon also had an intense pride, and that was given to them by their pseudo-immortality, and that was what fueled their war machine. Because they relied on nuclear weaponry, they knew that they were going to have a problem with the Blisk. This forced them to adapt and create both stronger nuclear weapons and other weapons like the Zap-O-Matic and the Disintegrator Ray to deal with the Blisk. And this is where the start of the Martian War began. The Furon couldn't just develop new weapons without having something to test it on, and so they decided just to get straight to the point and start killing the Blisk, who fought back in full force and held their own for quite some time. A long, bloody battle ensued and had large casualties on both sides, with Mars being their battleground. The Furon, having tested many different atomic weapons on an increasingly larger scale, decimated the surface of Mars and turned it into a barren, sandy wasteland that we know it as to be today. Most, if not all, of the water dried up as a result, and the aquatic Blisk were left with nowhere to live. And while there were many casualties on both sides, the Furon definitively won the war, but at a cost. The cost of their conquest was a mutation, a sort of forced evolution that happened as a result of their constant exposure to radiation. That mutation is the loss of their genitalia, which rendered the Furon sterile. The Furon might have died out as a species because of their newfound mutation if not for their work in cloning technology. They were able to repopulate their society with clones, but with an unexpected result. Each clone that was made after the first, the clones of clones, if you will, was increasingly less effective, which meant that their doom was on the horizon if they couldn't find a way to kickstart natural breeding, or at the very least find original Furon DNA to create clones with so that the gene pool wasn't so watered down. The Blisk, on the other hand, were all but wiped out by the war. Their homeworld was decimated and left without oceans, which the aquatic Blisk would need to survive. The surviving Blisk were forced to abandon Mars and took a warship off the planet and set a course for Earth. Or, at the very least, they set a course drifting into space and happened to end up on Earth. And this is interesting, because we have no reference to when the Martian War actually took place. Like I said very early on in the episode, they reference that it's in ancient times before there were humans on Earth. But we do have a date in which the Blisk crash-landed on Earth, June 30th, 1908. The Blisk warship crash-landed in Tunguska, Russia, where they would live and take a foothold in the Soviet Union. It sounds like the Blisk warship that crash-landed on Earth might have escaped the battle above Mars right at the end of the war, since it's said that the ones on this vessel were the only remaining Blisk alive. So that begs the question, when did the war happen, and how long did it go on for? I have some very serious concerns about the timeline, and hear me out, this is going to be an absolute tangent, but I kind of need to go on it. We can assume that their spacefaring technology would have been far superior to ours, and NASA says that a one-way trip to Mars would take us about 9 months, which means that it's not a stretch to think that the Blisk would have made it in less than 6 months. Placing their departure and the end of the war in either late 1907 or early 1908, but they say that it took place before humanity was even humanity, and humanity first existed around 2 million years ago. And that was very early humans, but that's 2 million years, which means that it took them 2 million years to drift in space towards Earth from Mars, which is a 9-month journey for our spacefaring vessels. That also technically means that the Furon have had their cloning mishaps and their sterility ongoing for 2 million years. And I think that is insane. I do not think that's correct. There's no way that can be correct. I mean, technically it could be correct, but that just seems wrong. But we do know that it happened before the 1900s because Mars was first accurately observed in the year 1610 by Galileo Galilei, but further observations of the planet are recorded as far back as 1045 in China before the Zhou dynasty. So that means that at the very least, by the 1600s, we had looked upon Mars's surface through a telescope, and we knew it to be the sandy, red, desolate planet that it is. So at that point, it was definitely nuked into oblivion, which still means that it took them 400 years to get from Mars to Earth, or probably more, because I'm sure it took some time to settle into being a nuked out red wasteland. So I know, again, this is very tangential, but it's not specified as far as I can tell, but I'm going to choose to believe, for the sake of Earth's timeline, that this war happened probably hundreds, maybe a couple thousand years in the past, and that the Blisk warship that was drifting through space was probably very heavily damaged and therefore wasn't making nominal time. Hence why it took them so long to crash land on Earth. But that brings up other concerns, like how did they have supplies for a trip that long? But perhaps they just had a way, or there were so few of them on the ship that they could stretch their rations over a few generations. Who knows? We're trying to make sense of fiction here, which is the first mistake. Anyways, so the Blisk were forced to crash land in the Soviet Union, or what was going to be the Soviet Union. And the Furon were left sterile and were in need of some minted Furon DNA, or else they were at risk of going extinct. So, both races were, in a way, facing extinction and needed time to collect themselves. The Blisk did so by infiltrating the Russian government. They were able to do so because, like the Furon, they had visited Earth before at an unspecified time. This meant that they knew how to intermingle with humans, and they were able to disguise themselves as humans so they could keep a low profile and rebuild. And how does a lobster disguise themselves as a human? Don't ask too many questions. The Blisk decided that the best course of action was to make Earth more like their home planet of Mars, since Mars was basically all but destroyed. To do this, they took the forms of Soviet visionaries like Lenin and Stalin to start shaping the political landscape, ousting the Tsar and his family in the Revolution of 1917, and using communism to form the Soviet Union. In this reality, it was the Blisk that were behind the USSR and the Cold War, intentionally stoking flames with the West to encourage the development of nuclear weapons. I'm sure that you can see where this is going, but the end goal was to start an all-out nuclear war in an attempt to render Earth into a radioactive oceanic hellscape just like Mars was. But they couldn't do so with just their numbers alone, and so they utilized Blisk spores, which were able to turn humans into Blisk mutants, which were heavily armored beings that were somewhere between a Blisk and a human, but offered no original thoughts of their own, and instead followed the Blisk's orders to a T, making them the perfect slaves. Meanwhile, the Furon were working out a way to get their genitalia back. They remembered that they had some relations with the primitive humans back in the day, which led to the rediscovery of Earth in search of pure Furon DNA in the year 1959. One Furon named Cryptosporidium, or Crypto for short, was sent down to Earth to collect the Furon DNA, which was held in the brain stems of humans. Specifically, it was Crypto clone number 136 that was sent down and ended up being abducted by the government for testing. And so his clone, 137, came down to find 136 and finish the job. And long story short, Crypto 137 was assassinated while in the body of John F. Kennedy on November 22nd, 1963, about 4 years after the Furon invasion of Earth. And I'm sure you're wondering how that little tidbit is relevant at all, and I promise it's not just because I think it's hilarious that aliens are wearing the bodies of famous political figures and carrying out real-world events, although that is part of the reason. The reason why this is all important is actually because of the work that Crypto 136 and 137 put in before their deaths, which is the reason that Crypto 138 was able to be the first Furon since their sterilization that was made up of pure Furon DNA, which also meant that he had his genitalia back, and the Furon were on a path to saving their race, right alongside the Blisk, who were, again, in charge of the Soviet Union at this point. The KGB gained intelligence of the fact that Crypto 138 was the first Furon to have genitalia since the Martian War, which was a pretty big deal to the Blisk. And so, naturally, the KGB was hell-bent on destroying America and the Furon along with it. Crypto 138, after an assassination attempt, learns of the Blisk's invasion of Earth and their plans, and begins a campaign to go to the original crash site in Tunguska to destroy the Blisk warship and stop the bombardment of Earth. This marked the beginning of the second Martian War between the Furon and Blisk. The Blisk in charge was Chairman Malenkov, who was orchestrating the destruction of Earth via Project Solaris on the moon, which was a giant superweapon that was raining down spores on Earth to eliminate human resistance so that the planet could be microwaved into a radioactive paradise. Crypto took the form of a spokesperson and convinced some Russian cosmonauts to go to war with the Blisk by telling them that the aliens were trying to take away their vodka. This, hilariously, succeeded, and they were able to take down the moon base alongside a rogue KGB agent named Natalia, whom Crypto was enamored with, thus crippling the Blisk war effort. Unfortunately, Natalia is killed by Malenkov, who reveals his true form as a Blisk. Crypto, after losing Natalia, takes down Chairman Malenkov, thus crippling the Bliss chokehold on the Soviet Union. And the human race was allowed to survive with the help of Crypto, and the Second Martian War ended fairly quickly. The remaining Blisk tried to send out an emergency signal to any alien ships that passed by and requested rescue. But the Furon intercepted the signal and replaced it with their own transmission. They hunted down the remaining Blisk on the moon, but there were still some Blisk left on Earth who lived out their lives disguised as humans. With no leaders and no way off Earth, they were left with no choice but to hunker down and submit. The Furon, on the other hand, were able to create synthetic Furon DNA and were therefore able to save their race by giving themselves their genitalia back. And that's basically the end of our story. I wish I could stretch it any more than that, but I really can't without just word for word going over the plot of the games. And I just want to take a second to reiterate an earlier point that the word protagonist does not mean the good guy, because, man, the Furon were awful. The Blisk were a proud people, but like I mentioned before, they had no ambition of seeking other planets. They were perfectly content being on Mars when the Furon attacked them, and the Furon inadvertently almost caused the extinction of the human race by attempting to wipe out the Blisk, not to mention the extinction of their own race. And for what? Because they were scared that the Blisk would become a problem in the future. I mean, they were right, the Blisk were a problem, but they were only a problem because the Furon caused the need for a problem by forcing the Blisk off Mars, which sent them to Earth. The Furon are definitively not the good guys, and were in fact pretty terrible to other races that they came across. And honestly, I'm on Team Blisk on this one. I don't condone creating the Soviet Union and threatening nuclear war, but lobster dudes just wanted to chill and be lobster dudes. Why couldn't they just be lobster dudes? And that brings us to the question. What did you think? Do you think that the Blisk would have eventually gone off Mars and engaged in colonial expansion if the Furon didn't force them to find a new homeworld? Or, how about, do you think that the Furon would have been able to survive as a species if they didn't kind of accidentally fornicate with primitive humans, accidentally giving them their DNA? I think not. But if they never did that, then they never would have had a reason to go back to Earth, which means that the Blisk would have annihilated Earth and that humans would have been extinct. So I guess that fun little primitive trip was actually pretty fruitful. Regardless, you can find us online at Lore to Death on your favorite social media apps, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions or suggestions for topics, please send me a message wherever you can find me at loretodeath@gmail.com. If you're using the Spotify app, there's a Q&A function attached to the episode where you can submit any questions or topics. Or you can just say hi. I mean, I'd love to hear from you. And once again, merch is coming. If you want a Patreon, please let me know, or something like that. I can set up like a coffee or something. But that's not necessarily something that I'm interested in doing unless other people want it. So be sure to let me know. Be sure to rate the podcast 5 stars. And also, enjoy the new intro and outro music. I totally forgot to mention that in the beginning, and I am way too lazy to go back and post and edit it back in. So enjoy the new music, and remember, don't start needless strife with other people. You never know, you might end up losing your genitalia because you started a fight that you didn't need to. Sure, you can always get it back, but you don't always have to lose something to realize how precious it is. Be grateful for the things that you do have, and be kind to others. And I'll lure you to death in the next one. See ya.